that meeting. We do have a board meeting tomorrow night. And it's informal. You guys don't have lunches. You guys don't have any lunches. Any dinner? No. Okay. And we did butter you guys all up and bring you coffee and donuts for our meetings, but we don't have that. So we're going to go through a little bit of background and history. We have some photos of some of the flooding in the houses. But basically, I'm just going to do a synopsis, a summary of where we are today. And again, no decisions made. Thanks for coming. And in the interest of keeping our topics focused, I'd like to ask you to not interject anything. We had some meetings that weren't workshop meetings, that were open forum meetings, and the topics got hijacked and many other things that are going on in Sunnybrook Lake. And then before you know it, there was an hour that passed. It didn't do with the flooding at Sunnybrook Lake.
I didn't bring anything with. I didn't take out
stuff. Just our focus on that. And if you got something else that you want to talk about, then tell John to bring it up there. Okay?
You see animal house?
Make sense? All right, thank you. I'm sorry, this is a little odd for us to be turning this way. But that's the way it is.
Well, we have to turn this way.
You can turn whatever way you want to turn. Okay. So, before the managers, we have a matrix, if you will, of the residences that John and I met with. The meeting started roughly June 5th, June 3rd, something like that. So we've been going at this for the better part of 2 months. There are 11 homes that were below the 100-year flood elevation. Of those 11 homeowners, we've met with 9. We've reached out to all 11 multiple times, and the remaining 2 that we have not met with have either been initially unable or maybe not interested in getting together and meeting with us. There might be an outlier of one that in the last week thought that they could meet, but not until September, something like that. So we decided to go forward and just, you know, maybe we'll still meet with them. That's not a bad idea, but have this meeting anyway to discuss the outcomes, because it's enough time. We've done our best to reach out to everybody. So the matrix that's in front of you has just a list of who we've met with and the order of the meeting, although I think there might be a little misorder in the meeting. I think we met with Kramer's and Sundberg's first, I think, John. I went back to my calendar before Mr. and Mrs. Keene. That's what you had? Oh, I had it different on my calendar. Anyway.
That's important.
I would say that you can see on the right side of the page that through the interviews and the process, one thing I will address is that I'm glad that we took that particular a bit slower process, because we got to meet with the individual homeowners one-on-one. They might have shared things with us regarding the construction or the year built, or things that they might not have been comfortable sharing in a public meeting. So they were all very informal. And Valley Branch was well-received, and people were very kind and inviting us into their homes. So the process that we went about doing this, I think, was well-served. And I really learned something about the process that I didn't know in the last maybe 4 years that I've been on the board, that we've had flooding. I've been on the board since 2010, but we've had the significant flooding first occurring for me and Ed, since we were appointed at similar times, in 2014. And then, of course, we had flooding last year as well. So what I did learn is that, first off, there are less people affected by the flooding than I would have imagined. In fact, quite a few less people that are affected by the flooding. And you can see on the right-hand side, those that have sandbagged and have had some difficulties. And Mr. and Mrs. Schwartz is the, John can correct me and jump in here, please. This is informal, so we want to make sure everybody understands it. Mr. and Mrs. Schwartz, I believe, have the home with the lowest elevation, correct, John?
Correct. They're listed in order of lowest to highest.
Okay. And so they have definitely had some flooding in their house. Mr. and Mrs. Keene have had some sandbagging. But you can get down to number four on the map on the left-hand side. And these folks have sandbagged, but they're not sure if their home would have flooded. So they haven't had any property damage at all. Number five as well, never flooded. Number six is a little bit of a misnomer. This particular home had their septic system flooded, and I'm correct on that, right?
Right.
John, their septic system was flooded. They did have to use a porta potty outside their place. And then recently, last year, they had the septic system rebuilt in compliance with Washington County, we think. So we visited that residence. And all the way down the list. So really, we're looking at, I would say, four homes that are more affected. And I still would like to throw the home on number six, which is the least or sixth lowest because of their septic system. And there's some questions surrounding that that are more affected by the flooding of Sunnybrook Lake. So
you're saying the first six.
The first four, yeah. Lincoln,
and then
skip five,
yeah,
and then number six.
Okay.
Correct,
yep.
Yeah. Number five, visited for a long time with this woman. They had been there in my notes. I think the home was built in the early 60s. They had lived there for more than 20, 25 years, I think. And she's been through a lot, and she said that the home has never flooded. So no interest in doing anything. Everybody's fine. Move along. Any questions about that?
No, I too was very interested to learn that in this content here because I did not know that there actually are fewer homes that are truly affected.
There was, I will also say that there was a resident who really thought, and it might have been true at some point in time, that Sunnybrook Lake was being artificially held back by a weir system. And that was still affecting the lake levels today. And then also, in addition to a manufactured weir system, also a berm system across the road. So John and I walked that whole weir, and I found it, and it can't hold anything back because the pipe is completely corroded and rusted. I don't know when it would have rusted through.
Where is it?
This is upstream of Sunnybrook Lake. This was the old streetcar grade, not too far south of Highway 12.
Oh. So on the creek that comes in. Oh, that's interesting.
Mm-hmm. So there was just some discussion about that having an impact on preventing the water from Sunnybrook Lake from discharging. But we found that to be false, at least in the last, I'm going to guess, I have no idea when the pipe would have corroded, but I'm just going to toss out 5 years at least.
It would have restricted the amount of water going to the lake, not restricting going out.
Correct.
Yeah, yes.
Okay.
And then there was a suggestion that a berm was created that's also preventing water from discharging. We walked back in a wetland area. There might be a slight rise. I mean, I'm not a surveyor, but I would have said maybe an inch or two rise. It's not significant. It's completely covered by wetland vegetation. I'm not sure that it has any serious impact at all in lake levels of Sunnybrook Lake.
Where is that?
Doris Pond? In between Doris Pond and Kramer's Pond.
Is that the old railroad?
It's a wetland downstream of the old streetcar grade.
I have a question. So Doris Pond, just to revisit it briefly. Is that part of this potential problem? Anything regarding Doors? Is there any concern with Doors? Because I know we dealt with it in the past, and there was talk about removing a culvert. I'm not sure. I don't quite remember. But there was a concern because Doors Pond held a lot of water, correct?
So.
Yeah.
You might need to turn some lights.
You guys, can you take a nap?
So this is a. This is Sunnybrook Lake, and this is Joslin Road, and this is Doors Pond. Doors Pond goes way up to Highway 12. This is the old streetcar grade.
This is the old streetcar grade. There's a cattle crossing right here.
The cattle crossing.
The water comes in.
That's what I remember.
Sunnybrook Lake here, fills up Sunnybrook Lake, goes through some culverts here, fills in this area, and it would equalize to the north in Doors Pond. This cattle crossing was built over 100 years ago. It's never been inspected. Don't know what kind of condition it is in, but it's all on private land.
It's basically a bridge.
Right? It's basically a large box culvert.
Oh, okay.
Or the old Chisholm Trail.
It's a hole in the dike, so to speak.
Okay. It's covered, yeah. So there's a walking trail. So if that were to fail and somehow not allow water from here to get to there, there'd be a lot less flood storage volume for Sunnybrook Lake water to utilize. There are no homes that we've identified that are low around Doors Pond.
Are there any homes around Doors Pond?
There are.
Oh, there are. Okay. Oh.
Farther north? Or I guess that there's a cup. No. Yeah.
There's about a handful. They're large, very large lots.
Entrance from Highway 12.
And Keats Avenue.
Oh, and Keats.
So, so again, Sunnybrook Lake, and this is Doors Pond. This is Highway 12 here. Can't really see with all the vegetation, but there are some homes.
Oh, okay. In those properties.
Okay.
Okay. Any other questions on that first little summary description?
I have a question here. It says, you said you look at the documentation, this grid, said some of these people say, it's never flooded, not sure if it ever would have, if they wouldn't have sandbagged, and then this is model predicted. 569, John, what might that be?
So we have a model that was used in order to calculate the 1% probability flood level. It used, I think it was anywhere between 50 and 60 years of data, and then some statistics in order to come up with that probability of flood. But it used real weather data, and so we looked at the high water level conditions from 1970 until now, and looked at the peaks of those of each year and compared it to the low floor elevation of these, or the lowest adjacent grade of these homes. And that's where this comes up with, that the lowest home Our model says that it would have flooded 9 times since 1970 if there weren't any sandbags and if there wasn't any pumping out of Keats Pond. So it's not a direct comparison, but it gives you a rough idea that the lowest home could probably flood 9 times over the last 50 years. And then the other homes, while they're below the 1% probability flood level, they wouldn't have flooded any time within this 1970 to today time period.
John, how long have we been doing the pumping now?
I believe the pumping started around 1985.
Oh, wait. Okay.
It's not a, it doesn't happen every year, but it's happened years. Like this year, there was no pumping.
Yeah. Right.
And last year we pumped for how many months?
Four months.
Four solid months.
Mm-hmm. A bigger volume than we had before. So basically, there's really two homes that have actually experienced flooding, and there are two more homes that, if they didn't sandbag, it might have flooded, but it's not clear. And then number 10 is a little bit of an unknown, but the others have not had any flooding. So that's very interesting. We're not talking about 11 necessarily.
In some cases, the homeowners, or to mitigate risk from the flooding, would be potentially, I'm not going to call it a simple, but it would be a more doable fix of some type of a dike or a small flood wall in front of Sunnybrook Lake, with maybe a sump pump in front of the house. Much like a sump pump exists in lots of basements that are low, this would be a sump pump like that, but it would exist in a lower elevation in front of the house. So any drainage water would go into that hole and then would be pumped back to the lake.
So, yeah, you're talking about essentially some version of the floodproofing.
It's a version
that we talked about, but a lesser version. Is that what you're saying?
Like, correct.
Instead of having them sandbag, it would be, that would be me, of course. Sorry. that it would, instead of people having to sandbag, it would already be done, basically.
Yes, yeah. Lincoln, to answer your question, it would go a long distance to mitigate the risk of that particular home being flooded.
Yeah.
And I also think, and I might let John take over on this, he did explore the idea of creating a situation like that, and that there's some way that Valley Branch could help the homes alleviate having to pay for flood insurance. So one thing that we discovered in the course of meeting with many people is there were a number of them that don't have flood insurance, that it just doesn't exist. So they're not paying for it because they purchased their homes prior to a requirement of flood insurance. Maybe they don't have a mortgage on it, or maybe the title company or the bank didn't just catch that it was below the 100-year floodplain. Mm-hmm. But in some cases, assistance from some mitigation of flooding isn't going to change the fact that they would still have to purchase flood insurance for those that have it. Because I know that's been discussed in the last year. Some people came to meetings expressly with the hope that there could be some kind of assistance that would offset the cost of flood insurance. I'll let you elaborate, because John recently really had to talk to the DNR about this and got a little bit more insight, and he can talk about it better than I can tonight.
So the DNR is the state agency that really administers the FEMA floodplain program. And so there's a lot of details regarding these types of issues that don't necessarily make a whole lot of sense, but they're the experts, and so we've had these communications with them to find out what might work. And what we found out is if you were to build a berm or retaining wall that would protect the structure from flooding, they would still be required to pay for flood insurance if the title company and everybody else follows the rules. But if you went through a private insurance company, your insurance rate might be considerably less because your risk of flooding has been reduced significantly. In order to get out of paying for the flood insurance, your house would need to either be raised or you'd have to fill your basement or something like that. And some of the people we met with did ask the Waterside District to explore raising their homes.
So did you talk to any of these folks about the idea of putting in a small berm versus a large berm that would flood-proof, quote-unquote? In other words, essentially permanent sandbagging. Good-looking and not blocking the view.
A small berm or a tall berm, neither one of those would eliminate the requirement for flood insurance,
right,
unless Valley Branch were to buy an easement,
right,
all over the area, and Valley Branch owned the berm, and Valley Branch operated it and maintained it, and it was to core standards similar to other communities.
Similar to the Afton levee or Afton flood wall, which is, you know, that's a big deal.
Oh, yeah. No, I understand.
But we, at least one property owner was interested in doing kind of a flood wall. So their house is low, but you'd have some steps to walk over the wall and then walk back down the wall to the lake.
So literally a wall.
Not too many, I don't recall too many interested in the earthen berm. Back in 2017, we did notify all the low homeowners that we would provide some technical assistance to construct these earthen berms. We, I think, met with five of them and gave them some concept plans and asked them to get bids from contractors to find out how much these would cost. I think, well, two of them did that, three of them did not, and the range in costs was, I think, between $15,000 and $40,000. Between our estimate and then also the real contractor.
Okay. So, what was the sense of the homeowners who have sandbagged but have never flooded and not sure that they would? Was there a wish for help?
The third one on the list we did not meet with.
Right.
The fourth one discussed raising the house rather than a berm or retaining wall.
Mm-hmm. And there's an individual that would benefit maybe from sandbagging, but they're not sure that the home would have flooded, and that's a unique case because of the individuals living there and being able to stay living there due to some health concerns. So
are you talking about number 10?
Yep. Yes.
Okay. Yeah.
I would say that overall, everybody loves living in Sunnybrook Lake, and they don't want to move, mm-hmm, and they don't want to leave there. That is, in general, not 100%, but in general, the case of everybody that we met with. Ed?
Is the public allowed to fish in Sunnybrook Lake?
There There's no public access.
There's no public access.
No public access whatsoever.
Even though I threatened to put in a parking lot and a public access and have motors in there, that hasn't gone over so well with the residents.
You threat.
Okay, so, okay, so it seems to me that our great quandary has been, you know, how much taxpayer money do we spend for this small number of homes? And we have looked at proposals that would mitigate the problem by moving water either to the north or to the south. And the one to the south was essentially voted down by other local government units who reviewed our proposal, our plan amendment, actually. The one going to the north into Browns Creek was a possibility, but without the cooperation of Grant, it didn't make sense to do. And then, you know, smaller options like changing some of the landscape that allowed the water to move more quickly into Keats Pond, right? Which would have some alleviation, but it wouldn't reduce the amount of time for the water to recede, basically, right?
I have a question.
It wouldn't be going anywhere unless we pumped a lot more.
Correct.
So then the issue of pumping, you know, we've been pumping, and last year we started pumping a higher volume of water, and that was probably helpful. There was a local effort to provide, to sort of open the waterway into Keats Pond. And there were no issues with Indian Hills in the pumping that we did last year. Is that correct?
I'm not aware of any. Okay. They could have turned off the pumping if there had been.
Right. And we spent on the order of,
was that $25,000 just for the pumping? That 4 month period.
$3,000 a month, and then the cost to put it in and take it out, right?
Treasurer Marchand, I think, is
that right? I estimated at $25,000. There was a fee for the pumping,
yeah,
and a fee for the use of the electricity,
yeah,
and maintenance on the pump.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So, so then we talk about sort of a bigger picture of moving water into an infiltration basin on the south end of the Indian Hills Golf Course, which turns out would be very expensive, in the $5 million range. Approaching the idea of moving it to the north is another $5 million if it could happen, which is unlikely.
Be a similar, the 2002 study and project and the 2017 study were basically the same, only one would convey the water to the southeast and one would convey the water to the northeast.
Yeah, okay.
So I'd guess that they'd both be in the $5 million range.
So, and part of that is the cost of easements. And So we've been talking about the floodproofing option and the buyout option as possibilities. So can we talk about two homes or three homes at this point?
Let me jump in here. Do you have something?
Yes, ma'am. I want to interject with something quick.
Yeah.
Tell us here and now, John, for me, if not for anyone else. That's Project 107.
1007.
1007. Had anything to do with any of this? In other words, when it was built, regarding flooding, nothing whatsoever.
No.
We did one of our proposals, the one that was to the south that was shot down, was to move the water into the 1007 drainage. And that didn't fly.
Yeah, I was just sort of exonerating us in some ways about what's happening at Sunnybrook.
No, this is all upstream.
No. Okay. Completely irrelevant. Good.
Yeah.
Good.
So
go ahead.
So
I just wanted to kind of draw the history.
Okay. So in a nutshell, this is likely far, far less money to mitigate the affected homes than a $5.3 million engineering project with discharges, Sunnybrook Lake overflow water to a stormwater basin in Indian Hills. So good thing that we put that to rest.
Bingo.
Because that doesn't have merit anymore, right, given the extent of what's happening here. So what I would like to do is I would like to propose that our next meeting, which we've discussed it with them before, is to meet with the county commissioners and talk about a budget proposal to assist with a cost share program to be determined by us yet on a handful of these houses that those people want to stay. They don't want to leave. And there could be a cost share discussion and some engineering design. I would like to propose that Valley Branch assist in the permitting piece because it's an onerous process working with the DNR. I don't think the Corps has to get involved in some of this. I don't know about the MPCA. I'm not sure yet. But certainly, we have more expertise on that than throwing all this paperwork to the homeowners to try to get that done.
Well, for sure.
So I would like to support those homeowners for sure with the permitting portion of mitigating their flooding project. That's number one. Number two, I'd like to discuss a cost share program so that the homeowners have some cost involved in this, and then Valley Branch would do an assistant cost. What that is, I don't know the answer.
Are you talking about specific solutions at this point or not?
Well, there are a couple homes that have some, there are at least two that have some pretty solid cut and dried solutions, I would say. I'm going to throw a percentage on it as an 80-90% solution. There are others that don't.
Okay. Are we talking about the first two?
The first one, yes, for sure, and the second one, no.
Okay. And what are we talking about for solutions for the first?
That is a berm.
Okay.
That's a berm with a sump pump.
Okay.
And what's
doesn't want a berm? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, I have a question. Let's just take a stab at something. Let's say it's a $400,000 home. Everybody kind of knows what it costs to insure a home. What's the additional cost? Do we know? Or I'm just guessing of flood insurance on a home like that?
We did ask those questions. I don't have that figure off the top of my head. Do you remember?
I think it's dependent on how low they are compared to the 100-year flood elevation. I think the lowest home, the lowest couple homes, I don't think they're paying for flood insurance, if I remember right. But a home that has never seen any flooding whatsoever, that isn't really even close to Sunnybrook Lake, they're paying flood insurance, and I believe it was less than $500 a year.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So.
But some of it's more extensive. Some people are paying more money, for sure.
So there are others who are paying flood insurance besides the one you mentioned, John?
There there's, I'd have to go back and look at my notes. I know that there's at least one that's paying for flood insurance. A lot of the homeowners have lived in the neighborhood for quite some time before it was mapped as a floodplain. And likely don't have a mortgage or haven't refinanced, and so that's why they're not having to pay for flood insurance.
So, okay, so we have one homeowner who would be up for a flood wall. We have another homeowner who doesn't want a flood wall or a berm. What do they want?
Depends on which one you're talking about, Lincoln.
Number two.
Let's see. There are, that one, it's up in the air at this point. And that would take some engineering and maybe discussion with the board on what to do.
Okay.
But that's not an easy fix. I'm talking about there are some, of the five or so, there are some easy fixes. And the easy fix revolves around increasing a step to the basement. The one with the failed septic system might require some additional attention. Even though they did just put in a new septic system, there's some questions surrounding not the integrity, but the level, the elevation that septic system was installed. And John and I looked at it and were concerned that it may still flood.
Huh.
So that's,
even though the county approved it.
Yep. So that's an odd outlier of one of the problematic houses with people, and that's the home that had an outhouse last year for a good chunk of time. Did their well fail as well? Can't remember. No, their well did.
Outhouse?
Yeah. Their septic system had completely flooded.
Okay. I was just picturing what it was like in winter. Yeah.
Well, this was last summer. I mean, cold.
So, can we get specific about these? Can we talk about each of these individually?
Sure.
Okay, so number one is, looks to be an option of a flood wall, which is, and number two is unknown. So that says to me that that could be a buyout, or that could be a raise the house, or that could be a berm, or I don't know, what else?
Correct.
Okay.
Yep.
And number, we don't know about number three.
Those people did not meet with us.
Yeah, and number four. They want their home raised. Is that...
It was a discussion.
It was a discussion.
Yeah. That was a discussion. And there's some... Yeah. That was a discussion with those folks.
Mm-hmm. So...
Number five never flooded.
Yep.
Number six is the septic system that's of concern.
Mm-hmm.
And number seven has not ever flooded, but they did put in some fill, and there's discussion in that home as well about raising the elevation of the house. Number eight did not meet with us. Number nine has never flooded. Number 10 has never flooded, but sandbagged. And there's no real solution for that home.
And the well casing is low. Access to the home is also questionable.
Yep.
Because the roads surrounding the house are low, below the 100-year flood elevation, and they do flood.
So number 10, the house never flooded, but the road looks like the road floods close to it, right?
Correct.
So...
And number 11 has never flooded or come close to flooding.
Okay, so you said number 10 there is.
So there's some.
Raising?
No, no, that house is super low, Lincoln, sandbag, difficult access, and.
You're talking difficult access because of the flooding of the road?
Correct.
Okay, but not difficult access because of the level of the house, relative to flooding?
No, they sandbagged as well, so there was concern.
So they get cut off?
Could. I can't remember if he said he had been or not.
Okay.
Okay, I wanna leave the roads out of this right now, would be my preference. That's another situation. So, is there an option of a berm for number ten?
Most of the homes are walkouts, but there's a couple that have basements, and so it gets a little bit trickier with the homes that have basements, because even though the water might not.
Yeah, you got.
Get into the low entry elevation, you still, you have water that's, or the elevation of your basement, 6 feet plus below.
Right.
That low entry elevation. So, that home, the lot is configured differently too, you could possibly build a berm, but then there wouldn't be any yard left, and in order to really provide the flood protection.
Sounds like a berm wouldn't do it.
Could possibly do it, we could evaluate that, it's just, it's a very complicated lot.
What about eliminating the basement?
If you eliminate the basement, you could do that, but, that reduces the square footage of the home in half.
Oh, I understand that. I mean, raising a house is no small deal, are we talking about hundreds of thousands, or are we talking about tens of thousands, what do you?
Again, it's dependent, and if that's something the managers would like us to look at, we can, but it's probably gonna be.
I'm guessing around $130,000.
Thirty to $100,000 plus.
Yeah.
And I'm guessing it's gonna be.
Depending on what they do.
Okay. Well, that makes sense.
Watch that show Homes on Homes, it would probably be more like $250,000.
That's Canadian money.
Once what?
Oh, that is Canadian money, excuse me, you got me there.
Funny way.
So the cost to raise a house could be almost as much as the house itself.
Well, yeah, once again, we run into those kinds of problems, so. Well, I agree and like the idea of cost share. I agree with that 100% in whatever shape or form that might be. My preference would be to mitigate the individual homes, because I don't think we're gonna be willing to spend the money it takes to deal with the flooding of that set of basins. So I've done a whole lot of talking here, and I'm gonna
indeed.
It's time for somebody else to talk.
Dave or Tony, you guys have some thoughts or input?
I only have questions.
Yep.
Valley Branch has been around since 1968. It was installed for this very reason. How many times has Valley Branch done flood mitigation efforts for houses, and what was done? I know the 1007 project, but has it been done at any other point in history in our district?
Project 1007 was the main project, flood relief project, took care of a lot of the flooding parcels in the district.
How many? Estimates? Hundreds?
I don't think it was actually that many. I think it was probably in the dozens.
Primarily Jane.
It was the Tri-Lakes, basically, and then around Lake Elmo, the lake, and in West Lakeland Township along Neal Avenue and 10th, 12th Street. Those are the main benefiting areas, I think.
So houses in the 20s, 30s, something, that number?
Yeah. And then I think it was the early 1990s, there was a flood control project that helped a neighborhood in Oakdale. And I think that was probably only a couple homes there. I think less than a dozen.
What was done?
It created an outlet for a landlocked pond that connected to Project 1007, close to Manager Heider's house.
What was the, where?
Olson Lake Estates.
That one that's way down there.
Yep. Yeah. And then in the late 1990s, there was a project that the district did that didn't eliminate homes from flooding, but it reduced the duration that flooding might occur, and that was in Downs Lake area, and that was probably a couple homes there too. The watershed districts had a very strong permitting program, so since the watershed district developed its rules in the 70s, the minimum floor elevation of a home is required to be 2 feet above the adjacent water body's 100-year flood elevation. So if those homes got constructed that way, there shouldn't be any homes after.
There was a few who did.
Yep.
What was done on the Downs Lake?
Downs Lake, it was some gate valves and pipes that connected basically Downs Lake to Horseshoe Lake, so also connecting to Project 1007.
It's never been used, I believe.
No, it has never been used. Yeah. That was the late 90s, early 2000s.
Yeah. Do you have any history of how all these projects were funded?
Olson Lake Estates and Downs Lake, they were ad valorem. The Downs Lake project was, I think, in the $200,000 range. It wasn't an expensive project. I don't know how much Olson Lake Estates cost. Back in 1986, when Project 1007 first started, it took two construction years to construct that. That was, I believe, a $4 million project in 1986 dollars, and that was a tiered approach so that about 75% of the overall project cost, the entire watershed district paid. So if you lived in Afton or Grant or Lake Elmo, Baytown, you all paid for that project. And then, so I think that was 70-75% there, and then it was 20-25% if you're in the sub-watershed of the project. So if you didn't live on Lake Jane, but your water would drain to Lake Jane, you paid that additional 20-25%. And then if you were on the shoreline, you paid an additional 5% or so. You were assessed. They went through assessment process and figured out the pre-project and post-project benefit, and that was your assessed value. So that was that three-tiered system.
Anything else, Dave?
I don't have any.
No more questions?
Nope.
Tony?
You know, I'd like to see a one-time solution for this. I mean, I new on the board, 2 years only. Obviously, this has been going on for, 20-plus years? And last year was a bad year. Roads flooded, houses flooded. This year, we haven't pumped water. So it seems awful complicated because if I was a homeowner, I'd probably say, I'm good, I'm happy. I'm, you know, there's nothing going on. Last year, I'd been upset. So it doesn't appear to me that there is. Tell me if I'm way out of line here, but it doesn't appear that there is like a one solution like there is the 1007 project. Well, there is, but it's $5.4 million in today's dollars.
We rejected that.
Right.
We rejected that.
So we're going down the road of berms and maybe some cost share programs. No need for bonding or anything like that at this point?
Well, you can bond if you'd like to spread out the costs. Mm-hmm. So if you decide to do a project with Sunnybrook Lake or some other project and that you don't want to see a huge increase in the tax impact from 1 year to next, you could bond for that. I know Ramsey Washington Metro Watershed District next door to Valley Branch, they took on a huge maintenance project to maintain infrastructure that was nearing 100 years old, and they hadn't saved up any money to do that, but they ended up bonding for that project so that their taxes wouldn't go up.
Do you know at what point it becomes cost effective to bond, or it becomes the cost to bond is, how do I want to say it? Cost too much. Yeah, cost effectiveness. Thank you. Something like that.
I don't.
I have no idea. I would maybe reach out to our audience, to our two commissioners, to ask if they have any answer to that question.
I recollect, if I may, that when we had our discussion with past President Buček about the potential for bonding was the concern for the cost of bonding itself.
Yeah, well, that's why I'm asking.
Yeah, not just...
How much does it cost, and at what point...
Our added cost, what I'm referring to.
At what point is it cost more than it's worth, or where it's too high a percentage of the cost?
So it depends on the interest rate and a whole bunch of things, you know, the common bonds, because the spread over the cost over a certain period of time and future residents end up sharing in that cost rather than passing the burden all on one for, you know, one generation.
So is $100,000 or $200,000 bonding sensible, or does it need to be 500 or a million or what?
And I think that's pretty low figures.
Well, that's what I'm
talking about. Only having to borrow a bond $100,000,
doesn't make sense.
Go after it.
No.
There's costs in hiring a bond counsel and going through that process.
Okay.
And, you know, it wouldn't make sense to bond for something of that nature.
Yeah, that's what I'm asking, and that's what I would think.
But you'd be best to talk to a bond counselor about that. But you have a certain level of fixed costs, and obviously, you know, if you're doing a $20 million bond, that cost gets spread out, and so it becomes a very manageable amount, where, you know, if you're talking about $100,000,
the cost that much.
Yeah, 20, yeah.
There you go. I'll fund you on that.
Yeah.
My interest rates are higher, though.
Oh.
So, anyway, we're, the $5 million deal is off the table. We're not going to do that. We're working with individual owners. So,
that would be my preference.
The question, I guess, for what 2019 budget is, what kind of funds do we put in the budget, right? I mean, are we putting the cart before the horse? I mean, we don't even know what's going on here.
Money in the budget for.
Yeah, with the budget isn't it? We didn't finalize the budget.
It's enough or too much. And,
well, I have something. It appears from all this, just to make a sweeping generalization, that we need to handle this. As you pointed out, on an individual basis. So approaching them, the homeowners, and their particular problems, and we could make a determination with their help and anybody who wants to help, other local government agencies or private individuals, on what the best solution might be for that individual. I think at this point, purchasing properties and things like that put us in a position where there may be hidden costs and concerns for, you know, well, you treated them this way, we want the same thing, you know, and yet they want to maintain their integrity. So to me, to use that phrase, can of worms, instead of just throwing money at it, and I'm not suggesting that anybody's doing that, that we talk to them again and ask them, what do you want to do? And I don't know if that requires us to sit down with them and an attorney and say, here's what we offered, here's how we can help. If you don't want that, you're on your own, to a point. And that's not getting tough. That's just trying to do something. And in addition, we're not necessarily burdening the rest of the watershed district taxpayers for undue costs or something that is nebulous or will become nebulous, in my opinion. So I'm suggesting that we certainly have some money in our budget for them, but a limited amount so that we can handle a potential contingency, perhaps an emergency. But anything that we do is going to have to be long-term, and it's going to require more help from you, from other sources, to finalize what we're going to do. You know, purchasing a house and what we do with it, I don't know if we're going to turn it into a bar or whatever. I'm being silly. But tearing it down, my understanding, $25,000 just to demolish it. And then what happens? It doesn't solve the problem. Nothing's changed. And now we own it. Now the public owns it. Do we put the public landing there? What do we do with it?
Well, if we did buy something, you could always resell it to a contractor who may be interested.
Right, or use it for
raise it and put it up and okay. Resell it. Put some money into it.
That's a thought.
So, Ed, we talked about other possibilities are.
Yeah.
It can go, there's some properties that could go into a wetland bank.
Right.
Like we own a wetland bank and it's been lucrative. It's taken a while, but it's been lucrative.
Yep.
So there might be a couple properties that might be suitable for that. We all know the area surrounding Sunnybrook Lake is tremendously low in every way, shape, and form.
Right.
There's a lot of flooding that occurs. So that's one possibility. Second possibility is if we were to purchase a house, that another contractor could come in and they could build another house. And then it's off of our doles and they have to elevate it to be above the 100-year floodplain. So that's another potential possibility. Mm-hmm. John talked about some other grant funding that may exist for assistance on it, but we haven't gone down that road to explore that yet because we haven't defined it well enough yet.
Okay. And again, what I was thinking, if I'm not interrupting, the
sale
of the house and, you know, are they going to sell it for the assessed value? What do they want for us? Do they see local government walking down the road and say, okay, well, we're going to sock it to you and get the most we can? And that's understandable.
I think that has to be a discussion that happens between the assessed value and the fact that it's in the 100-year floodplain and what the value of that home is going to be. And if that, you know, if any future buyers have to buy flood insurance, it all affects the eventual resale of all of these houses. And so those property owners certainly understand the reality of what's happening with their property now.
So as I see this now, we have to delve into it more deeply on an individual basis.
Yep, with roughly five, let's say.
Okay.
But is there a multiple options? So could a homeowner say, well, okay, help me with the berm thing, and it seems like a good option, and because I've never really actually flooded, or I'm real close to flooding.
Yeah.
And then I don't know how this works. I mean, do we leave it open, and then the person goes, oh, hell, I want to sell it, and you want to buy it from me later on, or how does that work?
I don't know. That's
a one-time deal? You're in or out? Or
yeah, I would personally, for me, I'd like it to see it be a one-time deal because the Watershed District has dealt with this since 1985. Okay. I mean, John wasn't even born then.
Were you born then? What?
Sorry, John. I just tossed that out there. They've done it, before then.
So with Project 1007, there were still some homes that were lower than the 100-year flood elevation of the lakes that were connected with that. So the Watershed District came up with this, I think they called it residual flood assistant package or something like that. And that was similar to what President Lucas said, where they sent out a letter to the identified low homes and said, Valley Branch will pay a portion or pay all, I don't remember, I was reading it, as before my time, but you need to hire a contractor and you need to take care of everything. Valley Branch is not going to design it or do anything with it. You got to take care of it all, and there was a timeframe associated with that on when they had to do that. And there were, I think, maybe a handful of people that took Valley Branch up on that offer.
To do what?
To raise their home or do some sort of berming or some sort of flood protection.
So then those people dropped off, and arguably probably stayed in their houses and did nothing and have dealt with it ever since. And who knows? We haven't heard from them.
Haven't heard from them.
So. Right, right. So back to what I was saying, I think, in the answer to your question, the Watershed District has been dealing this for maybe 30 years now or longer, probably. Even as short a time as I've been on the board for 8+ years, this is 3 times that we've dealt with it. So I would like to see the problem really eliminated as best we can, to just be done with it and figure out the best solution that's possible. And it does look like, in my opinion, that it's an individual solution. A one-size-fits-all is not going to work. Okay. And just to reiterate, and I said to all the homeowners, but just, you know, we have not ever discussed and are continuing to not discuss some type of eminent domain where people are going to be forced out of their houses. So just to refresh everybody's memory on that, that's not something that we've talked about and aren't interested in doing.
Yeah.
Now, there are people smarter than me on possibilities of what to do with the property should we end up owning it. And who says that we end up owning it forever? It goes,
right.
There's a sale, it goes back, it goes into some type of conservation easement is a possibility, or becomes a wetland bank whereby we, you know, accrue some income from it. It doesn't necessarily mean that it all has to be debt, but I don't have a solution for that right now. There are other people at the county that have gone through this way more than Valley Branch has, and certainly more than I have individually, that might have some ideas on it. I don't know the answer.
So, getting back to that. Once again, we approach the homeowners individually, ask them again, and This is what we pay you for, John, because while on top of not being experts, and I don't know about the rest of you gentlemen, and Jill, as she pointed out, there's a lot of things we don't know, and there's a lot of things we can't research, and we bring in a lot of people for this. I'm suggesting that you're our point man to talk to these folks to see if we can come up with a solution. We find out what they want. We more or less have that now. And then we begin to crunch numbers. We say, okay, what is it that we can do? How can we use our budget? And that's when we can bring in cost share or another agreement, you know, that we could all sit down and discuss that I don't think will be too difficult. You know, and then we can do something about it. Say, okay, someone, for instance, okay, I've decided I want the berm. Okay, and we come in and bring the berm. Okay, it comes into the budget, $27,000 out of a particular amount that we budgeted for that year. Okay, great. Got that one taken care of. And then the list goes on, and it's going to be over time.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but I think we have that information.
Yeah.
We know what, through the meetings that President Lucas and I had, we know what the property owners would prefer.
Right now. Right so now. They're right done. Now. They say, I want this to happen, and then
pretty much, Ed.
And those amounts.
An hour and a half with them at their houses.
Right.
So
I get
so,
it.
So, yeah.
So like maybe the next step would be to identify what the cost would be for each of those options.
Yes.
And then report that back to the board, and then also confirm with the landowners that that's what we heard.
We're going to have to get it in writing, because we have to be ironclad. We don't want to be sued. And it's not about that. It's not. I'm not suggesting that. We have to protect ourselves and the citizenry and everybody from drowning or having a deep basement. Ha ha. But you get my point.
Well,
that's our next step.
Yeah. I think that...
that was fluff.
Yeah. I think we ought to look at costs of the various preferred solutions, perhaps consider you know, a secondary option depending on costs. I think that we will have to talk about, you know, how we cost share, because if we have some of the solutions to be $20,000 and we have some to be $100,000, then I don't know quite how we'll handle that differential.
It's a case by case basis.
Exactly.
So that's Lincoln, it's a case by case basis.
I would think that, sure. So I mean, a sandbag my house might be more than a sandbag yours, or vice versa. So I mean, that makes sense to me.
We don't have any water.
I mean, not sandbag. I mean, to berm or whatever.
Engineering study or some professional work that's done on the value of a house or the cost of the berm, some solid range of prices understood, and then there's a 20%. There's a percentage that we may
added cost.
That we may offer as assistance from the watershed district, and then the homeowner kicks in some other costs. I mean, I think John's right. We don't know that until we actually do a bid on some of the projects.
I think I don't disagree with anything anybody's saying. I do think the one-off approach can be very risky, in that if one neighbor is fine with a berm that costs $50,000 and the other neighbor thinks the berm is ugly and they want their house raised for $400,000.
Right.
Well, that's sort of what I'm, that was my point.
You really need to understand the lowest cost viable option before you can give the homeowner freedom to select the best, the one that they like the best.
Right.
Sure.
Right.
Good point.
Well, that was, you said,
John, that's inherently understood.
How come he always says it so much shorter than
Well, he's smarter.
I mean, the amount of time that Dave needs to say something and you is astronomical.
You see,
Terrible.
I wear this T-shirt.
Pretty soon, I'm just going to ask Dave to talk to you for all the time.
So what I want to say is that my goal would be to eliminate the problem being directed to us. That doesn't mean, I mean, it won't change the water level situation at Sunnybrook, but it will change the problem of people who get flooded to eliminate that problem. And I would like to consider that to be a solution. One of the things that I would like to also explore is, can we eliminate the need to pump? That would be another question I have.
That's a good question, Lincoln. I guess until we sort our way through
we're not going to answer it tonight.
Going to answer it tonight.
But it's a question I have.
If there aren't any homes that are flooding, and they, let's say 5 years down the road or 3 years down the road, they've all been mitigated, okay?
Yeah.
Everybody's been mitigated. And if something's flooding that's not affecting the home, why do we still need to pump?
Exactly. Plus the road's 2 feet underwater.
Right. Well, then that becomes another conversation to have with Grant or somebody else.
Yeah,
right?
That's exactly. And I think the road's a different deal.
That's a different issue. But it's not the private homeowner.
Right.
That's the way I see it right now. Yeah. I mean, I would like to eliminate the $20,000 of pumping that we see frequently, minus this year. And I consider that, you know, a savings if we can mitigate that we've been spending for, I don't know how many decades now. Not obviously every single year, but yes.
And I would just add that we have benefited from that pumping.
Well, the homeowners
have benefited a little bit from it.
Yes. But we benefit too.
For sure.
You and John will continue to work with the 11 homes and come up with unique options for each of them homes. And then let's say you come up with some associated cost based on analysis of these homes. And then I would suspect after that you will, if there's an expense involved, which it will be, I'm sure, then what? And then the next step is county involvement, city of Grant involvement?
Well, let's see what the numbers are.
Well, no, I mean, I know, I think we have to go, we just can't be on, all on Valley Branch. I mean, somebody else has got to have ownership in this, I would think.
And I think President Lucas is saying the individual property owner would have ownership in this, it went all the way.
I don't, you know, I thought about saying, well, maybe the county ought to put in for it, or maybe Grant ought to, but you know, in the end, it's taxpayer money. So does it, you know, how much does it matter whether we just do whatever we do to help mitigate the problem? Or, you know, I don't know what the advantage would be in having another governmental entity add money unless it comes through a grant or something like that, that might be more broad.
We could explore that too.
So, I mean, that's, but I don't think that that's necessarily off the table.
All right.
Depends.
So is there any other new topics, anything else that we?
Just also, in a future discussion, we'll also consider the budget for what we may or may not have budgeted for this particular project, for this particular item.
Treasurer Marchand, yeah, the budget hearing is September, at your September 13th meeting, I believe.
Right.
Okay, on their preliminary budget, and then the final budget needs to be submitted by the end of the calendar year.
And we have input whether the public attends or not.
Correct.
And I would like to hint for the public to attend.
So what about the roads?
We're not talking about.
Talk about it?
No, we're not talking about the roads tonight, Lincoln.
Okay, good. That's just fine.
We don't own the roads. We don't have anything to do with the roads.
Exactly. Well, that, I'm just trying to get it on the table so we can get it off of the table or whatever.
Okay.
I'm with you. I'm not trying to say we ought to talk about it. I'm just clear.
Okay.
Going for clear.
Okie doke.
Okay. Are we done?
I was going to say something, but I lost my train of thought.
No. You're scaring me.
That's because Lincoln was talking too much.
Probably.
Well, I did. I really did. I said, in summary, and I was going to move forward, and then I lost track of that thought. Help me.
So I guess I'm not hearing decisions made tonight. You want additional information?
Yes, sir. Yeah. That's what we were getting at. So now we've established everything regarding what their needs are, what their concerns are, and the next step is to look into that particular plan of action and the potential costs and whether they're doable.
It's on the agenda for tomorrow's meeting, so we can talk about it tomorrow. We can vote on whether or not we want to send Barr out to do all this work.
Right.
It sounds, my comments would be, we have a professional engineering firm, evaluate the lowest cost viable option to protect the homes.
Yeah.
Also evaluate the option that the homeowner prefers so we can compare what they want versus the lowest cost viable option.
May not be the same.
And then yeah. I personally would like a little bit more data on the precedent of past work. So Downs Lake, four homes at $200,000. We have a precedent for $50,000 a home from an ad valorem tax. What was Olson Lake Estates, and maybe some details on the 10,007 project. We can convert them into today's dollars. That's pretty easy to do. I just want to, not that we have to follow the precedent exactly, but I think it should at least be information we use to inform our decision.
Very good, Mr. Smart.
Additional information that you or the other managers would like?
I'm good.
Well, no, I mean, I want to make sure that we're sort of all talking about the same thing, which is basically five or six homes, could be as few as three or four.
I'm not sure how else I can explain it to you, Lincoln. I mean,
I
concur with Dave. Give us a little more data on that
yeah.
based upon some historical stuff we've done. especially for us two newbies here, and I think the approach individuals makes sense. Again, you know, I would prefer to see a solution, get it done and over with, and this is something we don't have to talk about again once we get to solutions.
I think we will probably have to explore with the people you haven't met with another round to see whether or not they
We'll continue to pursue that. Yeah. I wanted to have this meeting because we put
absolutely.
In a heck of an effort
yep.
to reach out
yeah,
to everybody, and
I
so now we're moving
great.
Forward. But we have one, I think, or we're working on a date that's a couple weeks out yet. So,
if you need,
and if
help,
they reject us, then they guess they don't want to talk to us.
Yeah,
we can't help that.
And if you need help from any of us, please ask.
Yep. Okay. Anything else? John's clear on what he's going to do. I'm not sure exactly what we're going to discuss or if we have anything to discuss on Sunnybrook Lake tomorrow, if we're going
right.
to wait until John has a little bit more information for us at the next meeting.
I don't think we have to have any votes on asking John.
He's got his list.
Get more information.
No, we don't. This is a workshop.
Well, we don't have to do that tomorrow either.
Right. Anybody else have any questions before we conclude the workshop?
I have none.
No, this was very helpful to kind of get down to something that feels like it's doable. I like that.
All right. We have some sandwiches in the back. None of us have eaten any dinner. We can hang out, shoot the breeze.